Hello, my friends. It's Monday, February 9th, 2026, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee. And welcome to the Radical Russ Show, your Monday morning wake and bake, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in Southern Oregon. On this week's Smoke Session, let's talk about Donald Trump being the least racist president we've had in a while. Also, the Epstein class continues to rule over us. We'll give you the latest and a look, a harrowing look at our system of concentration camps through the eyes of the children we're holding in them. But before we get to all the serious political stuff, we've got time for three quick hits.
And that will do it. Seattle reigns above them all in the NFL. The Seahawks, Super Bowl champions for the second time.
Well, I hope you all enjoyed Super Bowl 60. Congratulations to the Seattle Seahawks. Everybody over here in the Pacific Northwest is quite excited about it, although here in Southern Oregon, we're more 49ers region. But hey, I'm glad for the Seahawks. If the NFC champion gets to win, that's good for me. And boy, not much as far as a game, though. You know me, I don't have any of the streaming TV services, and I live in a mountain hideaway where there's no over-the-air TV, so I didn't actually get to watch the Super Bowl. I only got to listen to it through the radio broadcast, and boy, let me tell you, a defensive struggle that ends up being, what, 12-0 for most of the game, all field goals, not much to listen to on the radio. But once it got to the halftime show, let's give it off to the Super Bowl MVP, not the running back from the Seahawks, who I guess got the actual MVP award, but Bad Bunny. What a great Super Bowl halftime. Now, listening to it on the radio, I got to be honest, musically speaking, meh. And that's just me. I'm not saying the performers were bad performers or the music is bad music. It's just, you know, reggaeton music doesn't really do it for me. It's a dance music, and most dance musics don't do it for me, salsas and rumbas and all that. So, but musically, it wasn't much. But then after the Super Bowl was over, and later on, I was able to get onto YouTube and actually watch the performance. And visually speaking, absolutely stunning. And the historical references all the way from the sugarcane fields through the power lines and the migrations to New York, the story of Puerto Rico, and how Bad Bunny weaved it all together was fantastic. The appearances from Lady Gaga and Ricky Martin also wonderful. And of course, the way that Bad Bunny closed the show with his salute to America, the words, "The only thing stronger than hate is love," in the background as he gave a shout out to all of America.
God bless America, sea Chile, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, Bolivia, Peru, Ecuador, Brasil, Colombia, Venezuela, Guyana, Panamá, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, México, Cuba, República Dominicana, Jamaica, Haití, las Antillas, United States, Canadá, a my motherland, mi patria, Puerto Rico. Seguimos aquí. ¡Ahora sí!
Of course, the best part of this Super Bowl show is how much it upset all the racists in MAGA land. Notable that the only words in English that Benito said throughout the entire show were "God bless America" and "United States." He didn't say "Estados Unidos." So interesting that they can't accept the multiculturality that is the United States of America. The reason we are the greatest nation on earth is because everyone is welcome here, is because of our diversity, is because we can be everything to all people. We've got the culture, we've got the music, we've got the language, and there's to be offended by this, to be upset that a Puerto Rican who is an American citizen wouldn't be considered American enough when he's performing in a stadium in San Francisco, California. Come on. Latin culture is so much a part of America, it should be embraced. But of course, they can't handle it. Laura Loomer, the I don't know, a plastic surgery experiment that is a known advisor to the president. She tweeted out on X, illegal aliens and Latin hookers twerking at the Super Bowl. Not a single white person or English translation at the Super Bowl. This isn't white enough for me. Can't even watch a Super Bowl anymore because immigrants have literally ruined everything. Oh, okay, not a single white person. I think that'll be a big surprise to Stephanie Germanotta, a.k.a. Lady Gaga. okay, I guess your Italian heritage doesn't count. Italians, you're no longer white anymore, according to Laura Loomer. Oh my God, not white enough for you. But it is kind of surprising Laura Loomer would tweet that out, because wasn't there an alternative Super Bowl halftime for the white folks? The great all-American halftime featuring Kid Rock and Gabby Brittley and Berkeley Glablon and Garber Blontick and whoever the hell else they had there. I saw some clips of it. How terribly embarrassing. Kid Rock is out there trampsing around. He's more like, you know, middle-aged Rock at this point. And lip-syncing, trying to lip-sync, and doing so badly, dropping the mic, having all sorts of technical difficulties. And, of course, before the show even began, there was like about an hour before, there was an announcement on X, a.k.a. Twitter, that due to streaming restrictions, due to licensing restrictions, they weren't going to be able to stream the Kid Rock All-American Halftime Show. Head on over to YouTube to watch it. The right wing couldn't even organize it with their own billionaire-owned Nazi-friendly social media site. Oh my God, that is hilarious. I hope everyone had as much fun as I did. And also, shout out to DeMarcus Lawrence of the Seahawks defense that played lights out. What, they have 5 or 6 sacks, I believe. And George Halani, the other running back for the Seahawks, the one who didn't get the MVP award, who also did yeoman's work in getting his Super Bowl ring. 2 former Boise State Broncos with Super Bowl rings. Makes me very happy.
Have I sinned or am I going to heaven?
It's like being in purgatory before going to heaven.
Because I know with all I've done here on this earth, I don't have no chance of going to heaven.
Aren't you at all interested in going to heaven?
I'm going to heaven, Lieutenant Dane.
So I saw that Donald Trump attended the latest national prayer breakfast, and kudos to NPR for having a photograph of him there with his eyes closed and his full orange makeup with the caption that said, Donald Trump allegedly prays. At the national prayer breakfast, allegedly prays. I love that. That's perfect. But just there's something about this Trump administration to me. It just seems like the whole thing is one big trolling of Christianity. Like, how much evil can I do? How much obviously can I be the Antichrist and still have you evangelicals eaten out of the palm of my hand? It's just right there at the national prayer breakfast. He's going on about how he doesn't see any way that he's going to get into heaven. There's no way he can get into heaven. To a group of Christians at a prayer breakfast, like the whole spiel, if you'll excuse the Yiddish, of Christianity is that anyone can be saved through Jesus Christ, isn't it? I mean, like, to say to a group of Christians that you don't think there's any way, no possible way you can get into heaven, is kind of telling them you don't believe in their whole spiel, right? You're telling them to your face you don't think there is salvation through Jesus Christ. And look, you know me, I'm an atheist, but I've read the book and I'm in love with a Christian, so I know a little bit about it, and I can tell you that this doesn't seem like the Jesus that I read about, that's for sure. And to think that Donald Trump would go out of his way there at this breakfast to praise and promote one of the most brutal dictators on the planet.
Oh, we're also delighted to welcome visiting leaders and dignitaries from more than 110 countries. They're here, and including one of my favorite people, President Bukele of El Salvador. He has been so incredible. He has been such a great ally of this country. Thank you very much. Such a great ally. He's, some of you have seen, he operates rather large prisons.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. The rather large, brutal torture prisons where people are shackled and dehumanized and housed, warehoused some 30, 40 to a cell in filthy conditions and tortured and never seeing the light of day, you know, like Christ would want. How shameful these people who would dare to call themselves Christians sitting in a room applauding that murderous madman. That's just absolutely despicable. And one more quick note on religion before I let this quick hit go. There was a proposal that I saw out of the state of Utah. And a conservative Utah lawmaker, this comes from Mike Stabil on Blue Sky, a conservative Utah lawmaker is trying to raise taxes on people who consume porn. And my apologies, folks. I got a terrible head cold this weekend, and I'm doing the best I can. So here we go. A conservative Utah lawmaker is trying to raise taxes on people who consume porn. HB 73 would force Utahns to pay a special 7% tax on top of sales tax. A 7% tax on every fan site subscription, camming tip, you know, webcam tip that you give to the girls that strip, right? Clip download or other purchase of material harmful to minors. And I got to say, this is one of these cases of be careful what you wish for, Utah. Are you not considering the unintended consequences of this move? Let's say that you actually pass this and it works and you're able to start collecting a 7% tax on all the different types of porn being consumed in the state of Utah. That would then provide statistics as to exactly how much porn is being consumed in this Mormon-heavy state and on what type of sites this porn is being consumed, and what kind of actions tend to get the most tips, and what kind of models are doing the best work. And you can tell my dogs are even freaking out about this.
Oh, sure. But you know, they give baseball players nowadays very peculiar names. Well, let's see now. We have on our team, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out, the guy's name.
And then,
Not for nothing, but have you ever noticed how so many people in Trump's orbit have the most appropriate names? I mean, like the Secretary of State who's rubbing cocaine on his gums is named Rubio. The drunk that's in charge of our Defense Department's got a name that rhymes with keg's breath. The person who's in charge of our legal system's name is Bondy. The guy who's the Commerce Secretary, who's nuts deep in the Epstein Files controversy, has a name that's a spoonerism for Nutlick. The woman who's in charge of the Department of Labor that's going to be screwing over Latinos is named Chavez DeReamer. The guy who's in charge of Health and Human Services, well, I guess his name's Kennedy. That's a normal name. But he's got a freaking brain worm. The person who's in charge of Homeland Security, her name is Christy Gnome. Her middle name is Lynn. Her maiden name was Arnold. So her full name is Christy Lynn Arnold Gnome. Her initials are Klan, for God's sake. The Russian asset who's in charge of keeping all of our nation's secrets is a Gabbard. The guy who's a major podcast grifter in charge of our FBI is named Cash. The guy who's in charge of our ICE goons who took $50,000 bribe in a Kava bag is a Ho Man. The guy who was running like a bull in a china shop all over Minneapolis was named Bovino. The woman who's in charge of using her feminine wiles to make sure to calm the demented president is literally named Wiles. The guy who was the publisher who was using Catch and Kill to keep stories of Trump's sexual escapades out of the print was named Pecker. And then, of course, at the top, the man himself, who was famous for bankrupting casinos full of card games, is named Trump.
Our top story tonight.
Our top story tonight.
Our top story tonight.
Our top story tonight. Colored.
Redneck.
Jungle Bunny.
Peckerwood.
Birdhead.
Cracker.
Well, this week I have to start off with the latest distraction from the madman in chief from his 38,000 time mention in the Epstein files and the fact that the world is waking up to him being a criminal of the worst order. So he posted this video where at the end of the video, the Obamas, Barack and Michelle Obama, their heads are photoshopped onto the top of apes. And this brought widespread condemnation, even from some Republicans, although not as many as there should have been, because this is one that you can have no plausible deniability on. The portrayal of black people as apes is textbook racism that no one can possibly deny. Even Tim Scott, the Republican, the sole black Republican senator, had to come out and say, I pray that this is fake because this is a terribly, terribly racist thing. Oh, shock that Trump is racist. How shocking. And of course, Trump, he didn't apologize for it, then did apologize for it, then said he didn't, and then said a staffer did it, even though he posted it at 11 at night. So who is this staffer that has his phone that late at night? That he didn't. Then he didn't apologize for it because he said he didn't see the end of it. He only saw the very beginning of it because you know how Donald Trump is when he's scrolling around. He only watches the first 30 seconds or so or something, and then he just forwards it on. That's all he needs to see. He's a busy man, you see. He can't be bothered to watch an entire 62-second video. Just not in him. But my favorite part of this, is Donald Trump saying, denying that he's a racist and saying, I'm the least racist president we've had in a while. So sit with that for a second to think about how this works in Donald Trump's brain. The least racist president we've had for a while. Well, number one, that posits that all U.S. presidents have been racist. All of them have been racist. Because in order to be the least racist of something, everything in that set has to have some little bit of racism in it, doesn't it? And then the least racist we've had in a while tells us that the presidents we've had most recently have been the most racist. But there was some president some time back who was a little less racist than Trump, but not lately. Lately, they've all been terribly racist. And of course, the number one point of this is that it asserts that Donald Trump knows he's racist. He's saying to us, I am racist. So that just amused me to no end. And the thing that really bothered me about this is how difficult it became, because there were numerous media outlets that were posting how racist this was, how terrible this was. But when it comes to the Democratic leadership, they could not possibly go all the way to saying that Trump is a racist. This is Hakeem Jeffries, and I'm not sure which show he's on, but let me just play this clip of Hakeem responding to the Trump racist ape video.
I called it a mistake, leader, and I wonder if you do think it was a mistake, or do you think President Trump is a racist?
Well, I think, listen, from the standpoint of it being a mistake, it was a mistake as it relates to the notion that you would post something like this.
Oh, my God.
A racist video targeting President Obama and Michelle Obama. Yeah. both of whom are incredible, patriotic, compassionate
so the video is racist.
Americans,
yes, go on.
As I've indicated, the best of what this country is all about. He continues to go after them and target them in ways that are unexplainable, other than the fact that he's just jealous and envious of their success, their eloquence, their brilliance, and their professionalism, the exact opposite of the manner in which he conducts himself.
Oh, my God. You know how long that was, that response? Do you think it was a mistake, or do you think Donald Trump is racist? And that took 41 seconds for Hakeem Jeffries to say the video was racist. And it was a mistake to post such a thing. But he can't come out and say Trump himself is a racist. Now, the journalist followed up. Thank you for following up.
The leader, do you believe that Donald Trump is a racist?
Well, what I've said about the president is, look, if the guy is not a racist, he's certainly doing the best job that he can trying to convince us otherwise as it relates to his behavior and the manner in which he's conducted himself repeatedly for decades.
God, just say he's a racist, will you? Well, if he's not a racist, he sure is acting like one. Why do Democrats continually want to give Republicans a bailout when they're in a hole? When they're in a hole, let them sink. When they're down, kick them while they're down. Giving this possibility. Well, if he's not a racist, well, it might have been a mistake. Well, it could have been. It sure seems awful racist. It seems awful. Just say it. For God's sake, Hakeem, the man is a racist. How hard is this, Hakeem Jeffries? Let me give you a little lesson here. When the media come to you and ask, is Donald Trump a racist? The proper response is yes. That's it. Yes, followed by a very long pause and a stare straight into the camera. Yes, make the pause uncomfortable. Make people have to sit with that clear and unequivocal statement. Is Donald Trump a racist? Yes. And when it gets uncomfortable, and then there's a follow-up, well, what do you mean? Gosh, how can you say that Donald Trump's a racist? That's when you can dig into it and say, look, Donald Trump is such a racist, his racism has its own page on Wikipedia to keep track of it. We can go all the way back to the 1970s for documented evidence of Donald Trump's racism. In 1973, the U.S. Department of Justice sued Trump management, that was Donald Trump and his father, Fred, for discrimination against African Americans and their renting practices. During the investigation, four of Trump's agents admitted to using a C for colored or the number 9 code to label black applicants and stated that they were told their company, quote, discouraged rental to blacks, end quote, or that they were, quote, not allowed to rent to black tenants. And while they were being deposed, while Trump was being deposed by Elise Goldweber from the Justice Department, he stated to her during a coffee break, quote, you know, you don't want to live with them either. That was the 1970s. Do you know how racist you gotta be to get the Nixon administration to bust you for racism? Nixon busted him for racism. We can fast forward to the 1980s. Back in May of 1989, Trump called for a return of the death penalty. He took out a full-page ad in all four of the New York City major newspapers calling for the death penalty for the now exonerated five, the five young men of color who were prosecuted and jailed and later exonerated through DNA evidence for the beating and raping of a woman in Central Park, of a jogger in Central Park. He said he wanted, quote, criminals of every age to, quote, be afraid. Oh, also in the 80s, in 89, he had an interview with Bryant Gumbel, the black journalist from NBC. Trump stated to him, a well-educated black has a tremendous advantage over a well-educated white in terms of the job market. which, aside from being racist, is just flat out untrue. There's a very famous study where they took a resume, a very well put together resume, someone with the highest credentials in academia and service, and they put a white name at the top of it, like a John Wetherington, and then they put a black name atop the same exact resume, like a Jamal Washington, let's say. Sent that resume out to thousands of recruiters, and guess what? The one with the black name, the identical resume with the exact same qualifications, got half the callbacks. So it's not just racist, it's flat out the opposite of what Trump said. In the 1990s, in his 1991 book, Trumped, the author John O'Donnell quoted Trump as allegedly saying, quote, "I've got black accountants at Trump Castle and at Trump Plaza, black guys counting my money. I hate it. The only kind of people I want counting my money are short guys wearing yarmulkes. Those are the only kind of people I want counting my money. Nobody else. Besides that, I've got to tell you something else. I think that guy's lazy, and it's probably not his fault because laziness is a trait in blacks." End quote. When confronted about that, 6 years later, an interview with Playboy magazine, Trump said, quote, "The stuff O'Donnell wrote about me is probably true." Also in the 90s, Trump was involved, of course, with the casinos that he ended up bankrupting, and he was criticizing the proposal of Native American casinos in the Catskill Mountains. He put together advertisements that alluded to the Mohawk Indians doing cocaine and bringing violence, asking, quote, "Are these the new neighbors we want?" It was supposedly a grassroots pro-family organization that funded the ads. It turned out they were actually designed by Roger Stone. Yeah, Roger Stone, the guy with the Nixon tattoo on his back. We can go to Trump's racism in the 2000s. He was accused of using racial slurs during the filming of The Apprentice. Former contestant Omarosa said he used the N-word and others. Bill Pruitt, a co-producer of season one, said he also heard Trump using racial slurs during the filming of the show. In 2002, that was when the Exonerated Five were actually exonerated, when a serial rapist confessed to the jogger's rape. This was confirmed by DNA evidence. Their convictions were vacated. In June of that year, Trump called the settlement a disgrace and said the group's guilt was still likely. Quote, "Settling doesn't mean innocence. These young men do not exactly have the pass of angels." That's the 2000s. Let's move to the 2010s. He comes to political prominence through the birther controversy in 2011, questioning whether or not the first black president was actually a real American. Then he rides down the escalator in 2015, running for president, saying that Mexicans are rapists, and some of them are good people. He repeatedly refers to Elizabeth Warren as Pocahontas. He claims that Arabs in New Jersey danced in celebration during 9/11. In his first term, he had the Muslim ban. He talked about the black countries being shithole countries. He talked about very fine people on both sides of the Charlottesville Nazi riot. He called the women of the squad, "Why don't they go back and fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came?" Three of four of those women are native-born American citizens. He called Jews disloyal who vote for Democrats, saying, quote, "I think any Jewish people that vote for a Democrat, I think it shows either a total lack of knowledge or great disloyalty." He called COVID the Chinese virus and Kung Flu. He worked overtime to restore Confederate monuments to the Slavers' Rebellion of 1860. He said in the 2020s, after he was out of office, that immigrants were poisoning the blood of America. He had dinner with notorious anti-Semite white nationalist Nick Fuentes and with Ye, the former Kanye West. He said that when he did his mugshot in Atlanta, that mugshot was number one. And you know who embraced it more than anyone else? The black population. During the debates with Kamala Harris, he said the Haitians were eating the dogs and eating the cats. And now in his second term, he's pretty much banned all sorts of immigration, except for white Afrikaners, who say are part of suffering what is called a white genocide in this nation. He called exploitive bankers Shylocks. He said the civil rights movement, where white people were very badly treated, and now he's capped that off with a video portraying the Obamas as apes. But Hakeem Jeffries can't get around calling this guy racist. Also, before I close out this segment, I did want to make a couple of side note mentions. Somebody had proposed that we need to have a new act following, once we get Trump out of office and get Democrats back in charge, that we need to push hard to show the rest of the world and our own country that we're not going to let this happen again, that we're going to learn from the mistakes and that we're going to fix all of the problems that Donald Trump is so helpfully pointing out with our 250-year-old Constitution. And they said it should be called the Donald J. Trump Act. And I'm glad they brought that up because I've been proposing the Donald J. Trump Act for a while. And Donald J. Trump, of course, is an acronym for the Declaring Our Nation a Lawful Democracy Just to Repudiate Unfit Malicious Presidents. This Donald J. Trump Act needs to close all the loopholes that he has shown us. First of all, it needs to declare there is no criminal immunity assumed for the President of the United States. We need to undo that horrific decision from the SCROTUS, the Supreme Court Republicans of the United States, who have decided that the president is a king, that one man is above the law as long as he's a very special boy in orange makeup. No immunity for a sitting president. Number two, a president can't sue his own government. What the hell? This is happening and people are like, what? He can do that? There's no law against that? There's so many things that Trump is doing that, like, everybody never just... nobody ever thought to do that. Like, there's no law against it because who would have ever thought that a president would sue his own government? Well, here he is, shaking down the IRS for $10 billion. And then he has to defend it with his own Department of Justice, which is Pam Bondi, who'll do anything he says. Got to get rid of that. Number three, in the Donald J. Trump Act, a sitting president can be indicted. Enough of this stupid DOJ memo that says a sitting president can't be indicted. Come on now. If the whole point of the Department of Justice is that it's supposed to be an independent of the executive, appointed by the executive certainly, but at least back in the old days, they maintained arm's length and kept a distance, kept a firewall in between DOJ and the executive. Well, if that's the case, why shouldn't the DOJ be able to indict the sitting president? Or for that matter, state governments? We've got to hold the president to account. Number four, codify into law that anyone running for president and holding the office of president must release their tax returns. Something that had been done as a norm since the mid-20th century, and then Trump just came along and said, no, I'm not going to do it. Got to fix that. Number five, presidents can't have stock or run businesses. You remember when Jimmy Carter had to divest himself of his peanut farm, put that into a trust. That's got to be codified into law, the Donald J. Trump Act. Number six, presidents can't issue tariffs. Now, that's already the way it's supposed to be. That's the way it was set up in the Constitution. Congress has abdicated that responsibility. Let's make that clear in the Donald J. Trump Act. And something else that should have been clear from the Constitution, no emoluments. You can't be taking planes from Qatar and gold bars and crowns from different countries as gifts and bribes. I thought the founders were pretty damn clear about it, but again, this needs to be codified into law, and there need to be severe consequences for breaking that law. And other things that should be released, medical reviews, independent medical reviews of the president, not going to his own doc in the box, his own Ronnie Jackson type. Oh yeah, he's 6'3", 220. Bench press 500 pounds and runs a 4.340. Come on now. And finally, for the Donald J. Trump Act, and I'm sure we could probably add a whole lot more, but this is all the time I got for today. No war powers without Congress. Again, something the founders were pretty clear about is that the sacrifice of American treasure and lives should be something decided by the American people through their Congress, not because some madman got his marching orders from Vladimir Putin. We'll be right back. another note about this presidential immunity. I've recently gotten a couple of historic books, and one of them is this hardbound that I got from Costco that has like the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Mayflower Compact, the Federalist Papers, got all these great, you know, historic documents in it. So I'm just rereading them and kind of highlighting things that I think are interesting. And I got to the impeachment clause, because the way that our SCOTUS, the Supreme Court Republicans of the United States, have set it up, the president is immune for criminal prosecution from his official acts while in office, cannot be criminally prosecuted. And part of the justification of that is because, well, there's an impeachment clause. If he does do something bad, something wrong, there's a way to hold him accountable. You get half the House of Representatives to indict him, and you get two-thirds of the Senate to convict him. There you go. Of course, founders didn't count on the partisanship that we have today and the fact that getting two-thirds of the Senate to do anything is impossible. So that's supposed to be the only remedy for this lawless president. So I got to looking at that impeachment clause with a mind toward this idea of criminal immunity for his official acts. And let me just read to you. The Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments, and no person shall be convicted without the concurrence of two-thirds of the members present. Impeachment shall not extend further than to removal from office and disqualification, to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. But the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable and subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to the law. Do you follow that? Two-thirds of the Senate can convict, but the only punishment for being convicted for impeachment is removal from office, and you're disqualified from ever holding any office ever again, all the way down to dog catcher. That's what Senate's conviction can punish with. You're out of office and can never hold office again. But the convicted party shall nevertheless be liable to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to the law. And it's that word nevertheless that got me thinking. They're saying impeachment can get him removed and kicked out of ever holding office again, but nevertheless, he can still be tried and convicted for crimes. Nevertheless tells me that the first part, the conviction in the impeachment, is irrelevant to whether or not that person can be tried and convicted under the law. They could have written it differently. They could have written, impeachment shall only mean they're kicked out of office and can't hold office again, and they shall be liable to punishment under the law. Right? That would give you the idea that, okay, once the Senate has convicted him, then, conditional upon that Senate conviction, they can be tried under the law. But they didn't write that. They wrote, nevertheless, regardless of the first clause, regardless of whether or not he's convicted in an impeachment, he can then be tried, judged, and punished according to the law. So that tells me that there is no immunity, that they made immunity up out of whole cloth. The founders, right there in the impeachment clause, found it a default that someone would be tried and convicted under the law for what they did that led to their impeachment. So the impeachment's not the only remedy, and the impeachment's not a remedy that is necessary to try that person under the law. The depths to which this SCOTUS has absolutely perverted the plain meaning of what it is to be an American, that no man is above the law, that we reject a monarchy. It's going to take generations for us to overcome. And as we overcome it, as the true depths of depravity, of what's gone on with the Epstein files, the corruption that's endemic to this administration, as more and more of this comes out, there are going to be people who are going to give us all sorts of apologies, like this gentleman, John from New Mexico, who called into C-SPAN.
I am a registered Republican, voted for the president, supported him, but I really want to apologize. I mean, I'm looking at this awful picture of the Obamas. What an embarrassment to our country. All this man does is tell lies. He is not worthy of the presidency. He takes bribes blatantly, and now he's being a racist blatantly. They were supposed to deport the dangerous criminals. They were not supposed to go after small children, storm schools, bring terror upon, you know, the little kids and the women and children, not just the immigrants in the school. All the children are scared. This is not a decent man. This is not an honest man. He openly takes bribes. He's pathetic as a president. And I just want to apologize to everybody in the country for supporting this rotten, rotten man.
Man. Oh, I want to hold out grace for these people. I really do. And I want to defeat fascism more than anything. And we need all the allies we can get. And the coalition needs to be as broad as possible. But oh my God, did y'all see that SNL mom confession skit? That's kind of where I'm at with this one, where the mom realizes that how Trump is awful and she's trying to apologize. And the kids are like, what the hell? Didn't you see that? Like, how could anyone have been this deceived for this long? You really got to start, John. The apology is a good start. We appreciate that. But you got to start unpacking what it was that made you fall for Donald Trump.
John, did you vote for him in all three elections?
I did. I was sucked into the stupidity of creating jobs.
Yeah, but was it just the stupidity of the creating jobs, right? This is something I keep getting back to, is that there is blame to be had on the Democratic side of the ledger here when what you're offering can't compete with Donald Trump, can't compete with the lies and the bluster. You know, I often say the reason Kamala Harris failed in 2024 is because Joe Biden tried to return everything back to normal. And normal was what got us Donald Trump in the first place. And this John from New Mexico goes on to talk about how things are terrible in New Mexico. There's no primary care physicians you can't get to. The jobs aren't here. They're not coming back. So much of this voting base here, people like him, and John, I'm going to assume he's white. He sounds white to me. These folks that got suckered in because they'd had privilege for so long and grown up under the so-called American dream that everybody's going to do better than their parents did, and we'll all have 2.3 kids and have a house and a white picket fence, and then the boomers went and pulled the ladder up from behind them, took all the opportunity away starting around in the Ronald Reagan era. I hope John starts to connect some of the dots here and see that Trump's not the aberration. Trump is the natural, logical extension of the white Christian nationalism this country's been fighting against since the slavers' insurrection of 1860. I hope he does some deep dive into why he had to reject the Democratic woman who had been a first lady and a secretary of state and a senator for the guy who was on The Apprentice. I gotta wonder how he can see what happened in the first term of Donald Trump and the completely botched response to COVID that killed a million people, and then in the next election be given the choice of someone who'd been a longtime senator and vice president and still picked Donald Trump the second time. And then, after Donald Trump commits an insurrection against the United States of America and then goes on to compete against a woman who'd been a senator, a vice president, a district attorney, an attorney general, and pick him a third time. But it's the racist apes video that puts you over the edge, huh? because he finally put something in front of you that you could not have any plausible deniability about. It wasn't the Muslim bans. It wasn't the kids in the cages. It wasn't the migrants drowning on buoys with razor wire on them. It wasn't the detention camps. It was the racist apes video. Well, that's great. Okay. I'm glad you're coming around, John. Now do some introspection as to what other lies you've been told and what are the real goals of this party, this Republican Party, since Ronald Reagan has been devoted to nothing but enriching the rich and turning America into a white Christian nationalist homeland. I hope you do that in introspection. And welcome to the resistance. But it'll be a while before we can trust y'all. I hope you understand.
So much depravity.
The current capital of depravity, one sadly passes for the modern world.
I never realized the depths to which depravity could sink.
Drugs, sexual depravity, animal cruelty.
All of this gutter depravity comes to an end.
We've had another week of people poring over the release of the Epstein files, the latest 3 million documents, poorly redacted, putting out the names of many of the victims of Jeffrey Epstein, but still hiding the identities of the perpetrators of the sexual assaults, of the violence that was brought upon these thousands of girls and young women. I talked a little bit last week about some of the stuff I had found, like somebody thanking Jeffrey Epstein, thanking someone for the torture video, but then blanking out who it was that was he was thanking, you know, blanking out the names of these men. And if you've read any of this, you can find it yourself if you are so inclined at the website jmail.world. So just type into your web browser, jmail.world, jmail.world, and it pops up like a Gmail account. So if you know how to use your regular Gmail, it's like looking at your Gmail account, except you are looking at Jeffrey Epstein's email accounts. And it's also got his Amazon transactions and his text messages and a bunch of other stuff, a Google Drive and so forth. But it's got a search feature. You can search for different names. We found all sorts of interesting things that way. For example, there was one document in which someone was typing something pretty innocuous, and in the middle of it had a redaction. And as you read the words, you could make out by the context that the word that was blacked out was the word don't. But why would you black out the word don't? Well, if you spelled the word don't, and you may have noticed from these emails too that there's all sorts of typos and just bad grammar and just, you know, for somebody who is corresponding with these super intellectual scientist types, the guy couldn't write worth a damn. If you leave the apostrophe out of don't and it's just a space there, then what you have is Don T, like Don Trump. So it makes it look as if they were given the blanket suggestion to go, you know, search and replace, go find any instance where it says Don space T and black that out. And then, of course, it accidentally caught a don't. We also saw the emails with Elon Musk wanting to know when is going to be the wildest party on the island after Musk has gone off saying he never wanted to be involved and he found Jeffrey Epstein was a terrible guy and he's not into that stuff. And here's this email. Oh, gosh, when's the super fun party going to be on Pedophile Island? And the email is dated on Christmas. The guy's up on Christmas trying to make plans for Pedophile Island. Oh, my God. And then, of course, your Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick. Why does I have to be careful to make sure to pronounce his name right? Howard Lutnick, who made a big point of going on this podcast and saying, oh, yes, I was the next-door neighbor to Jeffrey Epstein in 2005. He invited me over, and he had this massage table. And he said, oh, he got the right kinds of massages. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And I told my wife, oh, I will never, ever, ever be in a room with that disgusting man again. And then, of course, we get into the files and find that all the way up into 2012, he's corresponding with Jeffrey Epstein, setting up deals with Jeffrey Epstein, etc. And so many of these men involved in this, you find Bill Gates, allegations of Bill Gates getting a sexually transmitted disease and trying to secretly give antibiotics to his now ex-wife, Melinda French Gates, who she somewhat confirmed that that was part of the problem, was Gates's hanging around with Epstein, right? So we have all this smoke. All this smoke about all these men hanging out with the world's most notorious pedophile. And the thing for me about this is, like, even if you gave the largest metric ton Costco-sized benefit of the doubt to any of these guys, that they weren't procuring children to rape, or that they didn't know Jeffrey Epstein was involved in the business of procuring children to rape, even if you give that massive, massive benefit of the doubt, the guy admitted to, copped a plea, and pled guilty to the solicitation of a minor for prostitution all the way back in 2005. The legendary sweetheart deal he got out of Palm Beach, where they had hundreds of girls, hundreds of complaints. They could have charged him with so much. They could have put him behind bars forever. But he cops a plea to the oldest of the minors that he raped. And in some of the emails, he points out, Epstein points out, they convicted me of this thing, but it was this 17-year-old girl who was a week shy of her 18th birthday, I think, was the excuse he gave, right? But that's the one he copped to, so they could avoid all the charges for the 16-year-olds and the 15-year-olds and the 14-year-olds and the 13-year-olds. So even if you grant that massive benefit of the doubt, these people were openly corresponding regularly with a registered sex offender, with a guy who admitted to procuring a child to rape, solicitation of a minor for prostitution. That's your best case scenario. It's not like this wasn't public knowledge among the people that were in those circles. Tina Brown, the publisher, when invited to some sort of party that was going to be involved with Jeffrey Epstein and Woody Allen, of all people, had a response that was something to the effect of, what is this, the pedophile's ball? Hell no, I'm not going. So it was well known. This was no mystery in these circles, what was going on. So spare me with any of this, oh, I didn't know. You knew at least that he solicited a child for prostitution. He admitted to that and served 13 years of county jail work release. And now we're finding all sorts of things in these files that the FBI was ready to indict, ready to go, that it was struck down. And I've got problems with both Republican and Democratic administrations in these cases as well. What did the Biden administration do sitting on this stuff? Again, the only person who's been prosecuted for this is the one woman involved. None of the men. Meanwhile, over across the pond, Keir Starmer, the prime minister, is in danger of losing his gig because someone he took advice from to appoint someone in his cabinet was involved with Jeffrey Epstein. Like, Starmer had nothing to do with Epstein, but this tertiary relationship with someone who was knee-deep with Epstein is enough to get somebody kicked out of their jobs in the UK. I've seen Brad Karp from the Paul Weiss law firm step down, that CEO step down. There should be mass resignations and firings going on right now. Anybody who was regularly corresponding with Jeff Epstein in a non-business manner, if we're talking this, you know, hey, how's it going? What's happening? Was friendly with someone who admitted to raping a child. Or soliciting a child to rape, I should say. Other strange things coming up. Of course, they're raiding Elon Musk's office in France for ex-promoting child sexual abuse material. There's Lithuania, Poland, other countries are opening up investigations into the Epstein files. And unlike here in America, they may actually do something about it. They may actually make the stuff public. They may actually go after the men who committed these crimes. instead of the cover-up that's happening here in the United States of America, where it seems everybody, damn near, in Trump's regime, is hooked up into the Epstein files. I mean, this almost seems like they were picked specifically because they're in the Epstein files. So we can keep a lid on them, keep a leash on them. Speculation now about this being a Russian honeypot operation. Other people pointing to the involvement of Israel and Mossad. Saying that this cover-up may all be because this reaches so high into global intelligence gathering operations that it's a sort of mutually assured destruction if this comes out. Everybody's going down. The nuclear bomb of secrets, maybe. Another document that came out that was a little troubling was a memorandum from the Department of Justice announcing the death by suicide of Jeffrey Epstein in his cell. This memo is dated August 9th of 2019, when Jeffrey Epstein supposedly killed himself on August 10th. Huh, funny. It had it all drafted up and ready to go, that he'd committed suicide the day before. Isn't that odd? In a cell where his roommate, his Sully, had been transferred the day before, and where the cameras were mysteriously not working, and he wasn't on suicide watch, and the two guards kind of fell asleep. Well, what are the odds? And another thing I wanted to address about this, when we talk about these Epstein files, and by the way, just Super Bowl tie-in, the only ad I can remember from the Super Bowl at all was that Brave ad from the Epstein victims, the Epstein survivors, the women calling on Pam Bondi to release all the files, going at her directly. And the thing that's powerful to me in those ads is when those women are holding up the pictures of themselves back then, and you see these pictures of girls, teen girls. And I think there's, you know, we saw it from Megyn Kelly on the right and a few others on the right. They were like, oh, you know, it's not like they're pedophiles going after eight-year-olds. There's a big difference between 8 and 15. Oh, Megyn Kelly saying that shit. That's always the defense. These are the kind of people that actually know the definitions of pedophilia and amphibophilia. Well, you know, these 14-year-olds don't look like 14-year-olds anymore. They're all so... The old classic, you know, rape culture, the old defense, you know, she was asking for it. Look at the way she dressed. These teenagers, so sexy. There's something I'm calling the euphoria effect. And it's this years and years of us being marketed to. And think about all the TV shows and all the movies we've seen for so long depicting teenagers. And the people playing the teenagers are adults. And I think this has sunk in over the decades for people not understanding exactly, you know, that these teenagers are kids. I mean, in the series Euphoria, which debuted in, I think it was 2022, playing these teenagers in these sexual situations, Sydney Sweeney was 22 years old in the first season. Zendaya was 23. Let's take it back a decade or two, back to Mean Girls in the year 2004, that movie. Well, Lindsay Lohan was 18. Rachel McAdams was 26, playing high school teen girls. Let's go back a couple decades to Beverly Hills 90210. In the first season of 90210, Shannon Doherty was 21 years old. Jenny Garth was 18. And Gabrielle Carteris was 29 years old. Well, let's go back another decade. Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Phoebe Cates was 19. Jennifer Jason Leigh was 20. Let's go back a decade from there. The movie Grease. Olivia Newton-John was 30. Stockard Channing was 34. And Didi Khan was 27. So I think in our popular imagination, we have this adultified image of what teen girls are. And what they are is children. Children who should be protected from rapist monsters like Donald Trump.
Spent 7 years in a Nazi concentration camp.
I was in a German concentration camp for a year.
If Commander Schulz is found at this house, we all go to the concentration camp for life.
Some
sent you to a concentration camp.
They lived through the concentration camp.
I'm thinking back about that John from New Mexico and how horrified he was by the racist video of the Obamas as apes. And I hope guys like John and the rest of us here in America are ready for so much worse to come out from this era. And I'm talking specifically about the concentration camps that we have in America. And let's not quibble. They are concentration camps. They are camps, warehouses full of people that we have concentrated there. People tend to jump off to the death camps, you know, of Auschwitz and Dachau and the ovens. And we're not there yet. But do you not think terrible things aren't occurring in these concentration camps? We've had a few of our representatives be able to go inside and talk about the conditions they see. People crowded in cells that aren't meant to hold so many people, standing and sitting in urine and feces, getting moldy, terrible food, water that's diseased, having to share one toilet. We've heard about the beatings and the killings that have taken place. A man who's a detainee whose death was ruled a homicide, who was choked to death. Another man who'd been beaten so badly his skull was fractured. And that's just the ones we've heard of. That's what we know is going on. And we've seen the way these ICE goons, these Customs and Border Patrol people, treat people of Hispanic descent, black people, or people on the left who are trying to observe and document these crimes against humanity. We've seen the way they act out in public with the cameras on them. Can you imagine what they're doing to these people behind closed doors where no one can see? And to that end, ProPublica, which is a fantastic news organization, you should follow them, subscribe if you can. ProPublica has been collecting letters, handwritten letters from children who are held at that Dilley concentration camp down in Texas. This is where they took little Liam, the little boy in Minneapolis with the bunny hat and the Spider-Man backpack, who's now been returned home, but then they're still trying to deport him. This is the worst of the worst, right? They even saw Todd Blanche, the deputy attorney general, the president's personal lawyer, trying to wave it away. We have to get the worst of the worst out of the country. Got to deport the worst. What? It's a 5-year-old boy. How is he harming our country? So ProPublica went to that same detention center and collected these handwritten letters. And I've reposted them up on my Blue Sky account. Handwritten letters from little kids will break your heart. I'll just read some of the excerpts here. I miss my school and my friends. I feel bad since when I came here to this place because I've been here too long. That's a 9-year-old, Susie F., who's been detained for 50 days or longer. 50 days, 9-year-old. I have never been separated from my siblings, and it's honestly sad because they are little and they need their mom and sister. That's 14-year-old Ariana. Her siblings, age 2 and 5, are U.S. citizens. She's been detained for over 45 days. There's this picture from a 5-year-old. Luisani Tolosa from Venezuela. 5 years old, this little picture of just these heads and, you know, faces, you know, like a 5-year-old would draw. The only words on it, mi familia. 5 years old. 5 years old! I have already spent more than 60 days waking up, eating the same repetitive meals, going to the doctor, and that the only thing they tell you is to drink more water. And the worst thing is that it seems like the water is what makes people sick here. That's a 12-year-old Ender who's been there for over 60 days.
When I arrived, every night I cried, and now I don't sleep well. I felt that being here was my fault, and I only wanted to be on vacation like a normal family. That's 9-year-old Maria Antonia Guerra Montoya. She was detained with her family on their way to Disney World. And she spent 113 days in that concentration camp. ProPublica has the letters. I've got the link. I'll put it up in my show notes as well on the podcast page. I'm at a loss for words sometimes because when I see these little girls and these little boys, they are my grandkids and my great-grandkids. All my grandkids and great-grandkids, and not biological, they're through my lady love, right? I have no kids of my own. I get the benefit of being grandpa without having to have been dad. But all my grandkids and great-grandkids are little Hispanic kids just like these. 4 and younger. Well, I guess one of them's 7. Yeah. And I just see their faces. I am terrified that they could be at the mall one day or going to the Home Depot with their parents or something. And these masked, unaccountable, trigger-happy goons could roll up on them, zip tie them, take them away, and put them in some place like this for months. These little kids. And thank God they released little Liam, but it's not as if the trauma won't be with him for his lifetime. With all these kids for their lifetimes. And to have made George Takei have to see this. Mr. Sulu from Star Trek, who he himself as a little boy was rounded up for the Japanese internment camps. Like, we've got to do this every 80 years. We got to racially profile somebody, lock them up, take their possessions, take away all their civil liberties and rights. So many times people want to say, this is not who we are, but this is who we are. We've done it multiple times. We did it with the Trail of Tears. We did it with the Japanese internment camps. We're doing it now with our concentration camps, with our Kavanaugh stops. Brett Kavanaugh actually had the gall to suggest that, well, if you speak Spanish and you have an accent, it'll just be a brief stop where you can prove your citizenship and you'll be on your way. Giving a green light to the worst Proud Boy racist in the world to be deputized and to round up as many brown skins as they can for a quota, for a bonus. The real reason these guys don't want to be unmasked has nothing to do with the fear they're going to be doxxed and tracked down. No, it's because they don't want their friends and neighbors and family members knowing what they do for a living. I'll bet there's a whole bunch of them whose families think they work for something other than DHS, something other than ICE. Now, there's others, I'm sure, that live in social groups where they're probably lauded for what they do. That's a whole nother discussion about what we need to do to eradicate this rot of white supremacy and racism out of our country. Our original sin that we've never reconciled. Our compromises with slavers. But those kids' letters, they did it for me. And again, for the Johns in New Mexico and all these people that voted 3 times for this, who went to the convention and held up placards that said mass deportations now, did you really, really think there were that many millions and millions of criminals in the country? Did you really think that everybody coming across the border was somebody that was a terrible rapist? Because here's what I see about people coming over the border and what I see about America in general. And I made this point earlier about the greatness of America being that everybody wants to come here and we have the best of everything and we've got our diversity that's our strength. In a sense, there's also a natural selection involved here. There's an evolution involved here. Because if you're repressed, if you're wanting a better life, but you're You don't want to work too hard at it. You're too lazy. You don't have the gumption. You don't have the creativity. You don't have the stamina or desire to make it. Then you never leave for the United States. You never take that 1,000-mile journey. The people who make it here to America are the ones with the talent and the creativity and the stamina and the desire to make it in the world. That's why this country's been so great. That's why so many of our great companies and great inventions in this country have come from immigrants, because the best of the best come here, not the worst of the worst. Somebody went and crossed 1,000 miles of desert with their kid on their back and nothing more than the clothes on their back and maybe a small bag, and braving the elements and the coyotes and the migration. That's the best of people. Those are the people who have a strong desire to succeed, to make the world a better place, to make a better living for themselves and their children. That's why America became so great, is because all the best of the world, the people who could make that struggle, who could cross the frontier in a wagon train, the people who could put up with the back-breaking work, the slavery, the railroads, all the terrible injustices we did. But the people who survived those injustices are the strongest, best, most courageous people. That's why America's so great. And they want to cut that off. They want to make sure that we can't bring in the best and the brightest unless they're white South Afrikaners. It's disgusting. And it's totally anti-American. And when we get through with this regime, we need more than just the Donald J. Trump Act to address all of the shortcomings in our constitutional system. But we need a South Africa-style truth and reconciliation that happens for months. We need hearings and we need reparations and studies to finally put this behind us and to move forward as one United States of America. And we cannot do that when one side is not playing in good faith. Read a great article today about how there's really just two games. There's the cooperation game and there's the murder game. The cooperation game is we all work together in a democracy and we all work together to convince ourselves of what's the best way forward and to build consensus of the governed, to move forward in a cooperative nature to the betterment of all mankind. You know, like we said in our Constitution, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, assure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. That's the cooperation game. That's what the Constitution was all about. And the other game is the murder game. We can just might makes right it. We can kill you if you don't agree with us. And we'll keep moving forward with our vision. We'll just force you to accept our vision. That's the way of fascism. That's the way of Donald Trump and the white Christian nationalist right. And it's time to stop cooperating with them. It's time to stop funding their government. It's time to stop voting for their nominees. It's time to stop the courtesies of legislative procedure of unanimous consents. It's time to grind this government to a halt. And this Democratic Party is so incapable of meeting this moment right now. They want to continue to play the cooperation game with people who intend to murder us. It's that old paradox of intolerance. Well, we've got to be tolerant of all viewpoints, including the Nazis who want to kill us. No. To be tolerant, you must be intolerant of intolerance. And it's not a paradox, it's a double negative. Intolerance of intolerance cancels out, and that, therefore, is tolerance. You cannot have tolerance with a tolerance of intolerance. It's time to put the Nazis to bed. It's time to finally vanquish the Confederacy. It's time to eradicate the compromises with slavers and to repair the damage that has been done to so many people in the United States of America. Thank God for Bad Bunny and his presentation showing America to be the beautiful, diverse place that it is. Let's hope the Democratic Party can finally start to sense which way the winds are blowing. And they're not blowing back toward normalcy. They're not blowing back toward neoliberalism. They're not blowing back toward playing nice and having bipartisan compromise with our friends across the aisle. When Democrats sweep this 2026 midterm election, when we give them massive power of the House and Senate again, they must wield that power. They must hold these people to account. There must be massive investigations, televised hearings. No more of this Merrick Garland, we must maintain distance, not appear political. When one side of the politics is openly criming, prosecuting them will be perceived as political. You cannot help that. But that does not lessen the severity of their crimes or the need to prosecute them for those crimes. Do it in the name of all these little kids being held in our concentration camps.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
That's the end of this joint, my friends. The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. News, music, video clips, and social media posts are reproduced under fair use copyright laws for commentary and analysis. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by Russ Boom Boom Belville.
What's the boom boom for?
Boom boom boom.
Which brings us to our post-credits scene.
Jesus Christ, not this again.
Oh, Lord, not this again, Willoughby.
Not this again.
Got to say another rest in peace to someone who died too young, Brad Arnold, the lead singer and frontman for the band Three Doors Down, well known for their hit Kryptonite. It was an alt-rock hit in the early 2000s. I think he died in his 40s, like 47 or something like that, after a long time battle with cancer. Rest in peace to Brad Arnold, and I'll be adding some Three Doors Down to my Radical Russ bass play-alongs. I may have mentioned this, I've been doing, it's kind of like bass karaoke, basically taking songs and electronically taking out the bass lines, and then I play the bass line on top of it, so you can watch me play and hear me play, if you're into that sort of thing. Check out the hashtag on Blue Sky, hashtag bass play along, or you can find them on my YouTube page at youtube.com/radicalruss. You can contact me by email at radicalruss@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as radicalruss.com. And nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at radicalrust.com. And thank you for the recent donations. I appreciate that. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. Sorry about the head cold. We'll be back next week. And until then, take care of each other.